Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast is back, and baseball is back. As far as we know, as we record this, baseball will be getting underway by the end of July, the weekend of July 24th, 25th, 26th, decreed by Rob Manfred, Commissioner of Baseball. There is a 60-game season on tap. Agreements have been made. Players are getting set to report to, I guess, what we're calling Spring Training 2.0. It'll be at Miller Park in Milwaukee for Brewers. And we actually have some baseball to talk about. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel podcast. And joining me on the other line is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Brewers. That is Tom Hodricourt. And Tom, finally, you had to, I mean, I was relieved. I'm sure a lot of people are relieved. There's a lot of bad blood still around this agreement. But for now, we have baseball. You had to be, I have to think that when the news finally came down, I guess Monday that would have been, you're finally like, what took so long? But I'm so glad we're here. Was that your feeling as well?
Well, it's just, it's almost surreal that now we are totally flipping the switch to getting ready to cover the game. You know, it's all we talked about is the fighting between the sides for so long that it almost got to the point where you had to see it to believe it, that they would have an agreement. And so, you know, I don't know what COVID is going to do to their plans, but at least now they have plans or are making plans. And that, you know, this is what everybody wants, to at least try to get out there and play. We're just going to have to get over the fact that they should have done this long ago and move forward. It's going to be extraordinary what's about to happen one way or the other, for good, bad, or in between. There's never been anything like this before. And so here we go. It's almost hard to believe that we are now going to actually talk about the game itself.
And certainly it's more fun to talk about the game itself, and we'll have conversation here about the DH, the universal DH that's going to be in place for a short time, perhaps longer, we'll see. Some of the weird rule changes we have, extra innings are getting a tweak, the way the rosters are structured, we'll talk about that. But I do want to revisit the conversation itself between Major League Baseball owners and the Players Association. As it's been stated over and over how contentious it's been, there's been a lot of back and forth. At the end here, it ultimately came down to the players saying, we don't like any agreement, just set the number of games as we agreed to in March, going back to that March agreement, late March agreement, which the players have held all along, stipulated that they would get full prorated salaries, and that was the sticking point. They were not going to budge off of that. Owners did come back with a proposal including full prorated salaries, but didn't like the idea of going to as many as 70 games, so ultimately the players said, you know what, just set it. We'll still have the option to grieve, to file a grievance, which we'll unpack in a little bit. And that's what Rob Manfred did. He said, okay, fine, 60 games it is. I do think the players had the upper hand throughout most of these conversations. They had the easier position to understand for the layman that they wanted full prorated salaries, as was the agreement, and they wanted to keep that in place. They did this whole when and where thing, which I think was catchy and something people could understand. Like, we're done negotiating. Tell us when and where and we will report. Just set the number of games. But then at the end, the players did sort of back off of that because they did have a chance to accept full prorated salaries and a schedule, and they didn't like it. They said, no, we want more games. So they jumped away from that when and where sort of terminology for a second. And that, to me, was a little bit of a knock against them. I thought the players handled this very well and had the edge until the end. How do you sort of, I don't want to say grade these conversations, but what are your takeaways from the way these conversations went down?
Well, it's just very unfortunate that it got to the point where they just weren't going to agree. You know, it's very unfortunate that that's where, you know, we could have just cut to the chase 3 months ago and said we're having a 60-game season and we'd already be playing games. So it's just unfortunate that they just decided to not agree. What, as you said, it seemed like the players were on the high road for a long time, but by just at the end deciding to implement a season, Rob Manfred implement a season, they did give away some things that they could have had that would have been beneficial to them. So if that was done primarily to keep intact their ability to file a grievance of bad faith negotiating, if that's why at the end they were unwilling to strike a deal at all or look for a middle ground between 60 and 70 games, if it was merely so that they could say, well, we're going to file agreements, then that just shows you how contentious the whole relationship is between owners and players. And it probably portends for bad things to come, considering we have a CBA that has to be negotiated after next season. So, the general consensus now among those who cover the game is if you can't agree to find a middle ground during a pandemic, what chance do you have of negotiating a CBA without further hostilities? And it's just very unfortunate because I think they're turning off a lot of their fans.
Yeah, to me, that's the biggest takeaway here is that the contentiousness is going to bleed over into that CBA agreement. The fact that they are on such opposite pages right now, and that's tough news. And I don't even think 2021 is off the table here, and or I should say, I don't think 2021 is going to be just we could just assume that's going to happen without any sort of back and forth because I think it's possible the no fans in the stands situation is going to carry over into next season. We have no idea. We're still dealing with this
Yeah.
wildly unknown virus, and
Exactly.
it's
Exactly.
possible we're right back here again next year.
And that's a possibility, that this will carry over until next year, and it makes it further unfortunate that they weren't able to find an agreement or a middle ground now. At times, it almost appeared as if they were already trying to negotiate that CBA. And that's too bad because this should have been treated completely differently. This should have been treated as a once, hopefully once in a lifetime situation. Certainly a unique thing going on in the world, not just in sports, but the world. And it's too bad. I mean, sometimes you got the feeling that they were negotiating like this is going to be the last season Major League Baseball ever played, and they had to have it exactly the way they wanted. And I'm talking about both sides. And so it's just unfortunate that it was treated that way. I really, one of the basic tenets of baseball is keep your eye on the ball. I think they lost the ability to keep their eye on the ball a long time ago, and it's too bad. And it's hard to get past that. And hopefully when the games are started to be played, we can just take them for what they are. But I do think that now, going forward, there will continue to be a dark labor cloud hanging over this sport until we see what happens with the next CBA.
I do maintain, as I said last week, that people will ultimately forgive the squabble here because there was this virus situation, and it's not like baseball is going to be starting much later than other sports in the United States. Everything's kind of going to get going here at the end of July. I do think there is some forgiveness there, but it's all going to be framed by what comes next. If we have the same situation in 2021, this massive labor dark cloud hanging over 2022, it's all going to get lumped together as one big misstep. If we don't see some common ground, maybe these early negotiations for 2020 and 2021 will ultimately lead to some common ground, but there's certainly no evidence of that yet. Can you give me a sense? The grievance, like we mentioned, that's sort of one of the big sticking issues here. It seems like players were not willing to waive their right to file a grievance that MLB was negotiating in bad faith. And I think, in general terms, the bad faith and what we're talking about here is. Major League Baseball wasn't actually trying to meet players' demands. They were just trying to run some clock until we got to a point where they were comfortable with the number of games that would be played without fans in the stand financially. So they were simply giving back and forth that they knew the players wouldn't like because they just wanted to kill some time to get to this stage that we're at now. That grievance means that the owner's books are going to have to be opened, that there's going to be an investigation into just how much money baseball is making, and that's advantageous for the players in the negotiation after the 2021 season. Can you sort of break it down a little bit, like what a grievance means and why that's so important to the Players Association?
Well, if in their viewpoint, if owners weren't going to let them play the most number of games that they wanted to play, that the players wanted to play, and therefore cost them those salaries, they should have some financial recourse to get some of that money back, and that would be through a grievance. There's no guarantee that they would win it, and by at the very end, forcing the owners to implement a season rather than coming up with an agreement. I don't know if that was merely to help them in their grievance as well. They can say, well, they implemented, we never agreed to this. And so if that was the sole intent at the end of not agreeing to anything, then it just shows you how contentious the relationship is between labor and management. And again, portends bad things for 2021 and beyond. So let's face it, if a grievance is filed on either side about these negotiations, that's going to poison the well considerably for the next negotiation, because it won't be forgotten. And will it turn out to be dueling grievances, where the management will come back and say, well, you never gave us a break financially on this. And, it all goes back to that March agreement. They can't agree what they agreed on. The players say it guaranteed them full prorated pay, and the owners say it allowed them to revisit the situation if there were going to be no fans. So these sides literally cannot agree on what they agreed on. And that extended to that face-to-face meeting between Manfred and Clark, where Manfred seemed to come out of it thinking they had basically a framework for a deal, and Clark said, no, we didn't. So, the next time these sites get together, they definitely need a notary or a stenographer on hand to record what was agreed and what not, was not agreed on and not agreed to. And, just the bottom line that the distrust between the sides is back to 1994-95 levels. And that doesn't bode well for the sport. Fans do not want to hear it. Fans just want them to play baseball. They don't want to hear about who, quote unquote, won the negotiations. They want you to get out on the field and play it, And I think there's already a lot of angst over just playing 60 games, and just how that's going to allow for anomalies. But just the fact that at the end the players were not willing to agree on expanded playoffs, they would have benefited from that too, if not strictly financially, from other ways, just from having more players in the playoffs. I think players would generally like to be in the playoffs than going home fishing and hunting. So just the fact that they were not willing to agree to expand the playoffs, which would have been better for both sides, just shows you again how little trust there is between the sides and what the acrimony level is. And that's unfortunate. At least if they would have gone from 10 to 16 game teams in the playoffs in a 60 game season, it would allow maybe for a team that just had one bad week to not get eliminated. You know what? Probably would have allowed for fewer anomalies into the postseason.
Yeah, you look at, and I did this at jsonline.com, looking at the Brewers' seasons past, either through the lens of the first 60 games or the last 60 games of the season, and you got a pretty wide variety of how those outcomes would have shaken out. I mean, there's lots of examples of teams through the first 60 games that were really pretty solid, were in playoff position, that wound up, with 70 some, 80 some wins, or low 80 wins. So,
Well, the question is, which 60 games
right.
do you want to pull out? Because if you just say the first 60 games of a season, those were played differently, knowing there were 162 games, and then these games will be played,
Absolutely.
knowing that they only have 60, and right out of the chute with expanded rosters too. Let's face it, these games are going to be played differently than they would the first 60 games of a 162 game season. Early in the year, a manager sometimes has to give up on today's game to make sure that his pitching is intact for tomorrow's game. They're not going to want to do that now. Well, what is the math? Each game is 2.7 times more important than it used to be because there's only 60 of them.
Yeah, we're gonna go into that detail, but before I do that, one last question. I'm curious how you think Rob Manfred comes out of all of this, because you brought him up a little bit. He seemed to have a very different impression of that face-to-face meeting with Tony Clark. He kind of famously made a comment about how he was 100% confident there would be baseball, which I think is a risky thing to say given the pandemic by itself. And then he walked that back. He is sort of the, I mean, obviously he's representing the owner's interests, but ultimately the buck stops with him. If there's a contract or a negotiation in March and the language doesn't stipulate what the owners believe the language inferred, ultimately I feel like that's on the owners a little bit. Even the MLB lawyers said that yeah, the guarantee that was made in March is for full prorated salaries, and owners felt that was only on the that was only in the situation that fans would be in the stands. So I feel like Rob Manfred made a couple missteps here. I have a feeling ownership isn't crazy about him either. I mean, I don't know, but they definitely he definitely had some issues here. Like I said, the players didn't come out smelling like roses at the end either. But what do you think about Rob Manfred after all of this?
Well, the players pretty much showed their disdain for him by making him implement a season. You know, at the end, they made him do that. They said, "We're not going to agree with you. We're not going to make it easier on you by agreeing with you and make it look like we're in a kumbaya moment here at the end." By making him implement, you know, they've made him out to be the bad guy. Well, look, you know, he implemented a season. He wasn't willing to reach an agreement with us. So the players certainly, you know, put him out on an island at the end. And, you know, he does do the bidding for the owners. He does work for the owners. So he may have been fighting just to hold his group together at the end, too, which put him in a bad position because there was word all along that some of the owners were willing to just not play any games.
Right, right.
So he might have been fighting like crazy to keep his own group together. I do think players, you know, were galvanized way more than anybody thought they were for a group that has over 1,000 members. Just holding them together, because not every one of the players is going to come out financially better for doing it this way, you know. So, the salary advances they were given, the last deal included some more forgiveness by the owners of that money. And then that the players gave that up too by not reaching an agreement. So, there was damage done on both sides. And, I obviously Robert Manfred does not look as good in general now to either the players or the fans because of the way this was handled. So, again, it all comes down to arguing over money during a pandemic. Good luck selling that to the public.
Yeah, and not only that, the owners were already losing public support for not paying minor leaguers in some cases, and in some cases furloughing employees, which, when you're the billionaire in the billionaire versus millionaire competition, that does not look good. And I do feel like, at least on social media, public sentiment was not in the owner's corner, which is rare for a labor dispute. Usually it's the labor that gets the brunt of sort of the negative attention. Don't know where it shakes out at the end, but
let's just frame it this way. Going forward, these customers are who they're going to try to sell tickets to for future seasons, right? So if you're already economically wounded by the pandemic and therefore don't have as much disposable income as you did prior, and now a sport comes to you and asks you to commit some of your remaining money for future seasons, and you have in the front of your mind, well, you guys couldn't even agree on anything during a pandemic, which side of the fence are you going to jump on when they ask you to give them some money going forward? I mean, they've no doubt turned a lot of their fans off. And now when you throw in the economic distress that those fans might be, you know, they've probably lost some people forevermore now.
Yeah. I'd be curious. And this is my last thought before we move on. I'd be curious to just do sort of a survey in each baseball market. I feel like this is a little bit like how people view quote unquote the media. They don't trust the media, but they trust their local newspaper. And that's how I imagine this is going in baseball circles. Like people don't like the owners, but they do like the owner of their team because they've built a relationship, a trust, so you know, in their minds anyway, over the last several seasons or however long they've owned that team. And so I have a feeling it's conflicting for fans. They're disappointed in baseball, but they still want to see their team on the field and their players, even if their players are part of the Players Association, you know? So
it's the very Brewers fans are still going to root for the Brewers, and it'll be, you know, everybody's going to be doing it from home, you know, watching the game on TV. So, you know, that'll be, in other words, they don't have to commit any more money this year to the Brewers because you can't go to the ballpark anyway. But it's moving forward that I think where they're going to start, you know, seeing some fan disgruntlement when they try to sell tickets for future years. especially with a CBA cloud hanging over the sport for the next couple of years. So it might behoove them. I know it's going to be hard, but if there was ever time to try to get that thing done ahead of time and not go up to another deadline with more bitterness, this would be the time to do it. But I'm not sure they're capable of doing it now after what we just saw the last 3 months.
Yeah, what's gonna have to it's gotta happen behind the scenes too. It can't happen in public like this.
No, that's the other thing is we're living in a different world where every single thing they do, comes out, almost in real time. So there's no secrets anymore of, both sides seem more than willing to let nasty emails to each other out to the media,
Right.
So again, a further sign of how much they distrust each other. When you're going to make accusations and have name calling, and you're willing to, for that to go out and be played publicly, that's not a good sign.
Right. And like you said, no fans in the stands. Far from the only change we're going to see in Major League Baseball this year, there will be universal DH in the National League, although it's not as clear to me that it's going to be permanently cemented that way because the way the agreement was structured, 2021 will theoretically revert back to pitchers batting in the NL. Although I guess that's still maybe a little bit up for conversation down the line here. We know that extra innings will be kept to a minimum, that once the 10th inning starts, a runner will be placed at second base. This is the sort of softball rules or tournament rules in some youth tournament circles. Runner at second base to start the inning, so encouraging more scoring to get games over with more quickly. The whole point is they don't want to you don't want players there any longer than they have to be. So there's going to be restricted amount of time they can be at the ballpark. Certainly, they're also trying to restrict the amount of time they'll be playing the game. You've got different roster rules. We're going to start with 30 players on a team instead of the customary 25. It was going to be 26 this year. And then that'll sort of scale back as the season goes on. It really work in reverse of how a normal season does, where you open it up to the entire 40-man roster in September. This is going to be a reduction of that bit by bit, although there will also be a taxi squad of players, players who can travel with the team, who can be activated on a moment's notice, and an additional squad of players who will be nearby, presumably in Appleton at the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers facility or somewhere close by, ready and willing whenever they're called upon. A lot of crazy stuff. I mean, we have the three batter rule, that's still happening for the first time. It seems like eons ago we were talking about that, but there's also that rule change that was going to happen anyway. Just a lot of stuff. I mean, I know we're sort of infringing on the fundamental way baseball is played here with all these changes. I personally am fine with all of them. I don't feel like any of it is out of bounds, but how do you feel about it? I mean, some of this stuff is dramatically shifting the game of Major League Baseball.
Well, I mean, hopefully most of it is just for this year, and we're only talking about 60 games. I mean, these are all COVID-related changes, really. The DH thing is because pitchers aren't going to be ready to hit after a truncated spring training. Very few of the pitchers had even swung the bat when camp stopped because they always wait till the end of camp for them to do that. So they're trying. This is a health measure, safety measure there too, try to protect them from injury, hitting. When they really need to focus these next 3 weeks on pitching. So and then those extra inning rules are made to try to get them, like you said, not spend all day out there on the field and get them off the field. So it's definitely going to be different. Again. A lot of this is probably just going to be for this year. And so we'll see how it goes. It's definitely going to make for interesting commentary. If you're the pitcher that's brought in the 10th inning in a 1-1 game, you're already in a jam before you even throw your first pitch. You got a guy on second base with no outs. You're already in a jam.
Yeah, and we can go deeper into the Brewers roster and how they're affected, maybe in another podcast. But the designated hitter, I think everyone just sort of assumes, oh, it'll be Ryan Braun, of course. And that does make some sense when a right-handed pitcher is on the mound and you've got Justin Smoak playing first base and a few other lefties in the game. But it's not obvious if it's a left-handed pitcher on the mound, because Ryan Braun is kind of the guy that's going to be playing first base in that circumstance. So I've seen Keston Hira floated as a possibility there, and you'd have a all right-handed infield with with Braun at first base and with Jed Jerko in the game at third base. Some of these guys, I think people forget, are Brewers, like Brock Holt and Jed Jerko and Justin Smoak and Brett Anderson. You know, it's been so long and they haven't played for the Brewers yet. But, you know, you could have RC at short and Luis Urias at second base. So, as far as the DH goes, what are you thinking as it relates to the Brewers?
Well, I do think that you're going to see Ryan Braun get most of the at-bats. It solves a big issue with where he was going to play. And if you remember, he had a sore shoulder at the when camp was shut down, that stopped him from even playing in the field. He had not even played any games at first base yet. So I do think that this is a situation that's going to definitely help the Brewers because, you know, otherwise they were going to try to have him share some time in the outfield and first base, and now they're not going to have to do that. They can just let Justin Smoak get most of the at-bats. You know, Justin Smoak is a switch hitter, you know, so he can play against lefties and righties. Or if you want to let Logan Morrison get some at-bats over there, he was swinging the bat well. But this sets them up way better in the outfield. Let's not even worry about first base. This sets them up way better in the outfield because, you know, they had already decided to move Christian Yelich to left field so that Avisaíl García, who has a much stronger throwing arm, can play right field. And then you have Lorenzo Cain, one of the best center fielders in baseball. So they are definitely better off when they have Yelich, Cain, and García getting almost all the playing time in the outfield. We're only talking about 60 games now, too. So it's all going to be all hands on deck. Let's go. And then Braun just, you know, Braun, the one thing he still has shown he can do in the last few years in his mid-30s is swing the bat. So I think this makes the Brewers a better team to have the DH because you're going to have Braun get way more playing time as DH. Craig Counsell won't have to do all the things he's done in the past to give him time off to rest his legs and arm and all that. And then first base, if Smoak's swinging the bat good, he's just going to be the first baseman. You know, and other guys will fill in as they fill in. So I think the DH this particular year, over 60 games, is going to be way more beneficial to the Brewers. And I'm working on a story about that right now that we'll have online later today and in the print product tomorrow so people can read about that further. I'll leave that little teaser out there.
JSonline.com, the place to find that. As far as the DH goes, I really think we're going to be done seeing pitchers batting altogether because it seems like the DH sort of falls into the health category. You know, you talked about pitchers just not being ready to hit, and that it's the type of thing that everybody seems to agree is an okay thing, both the players and the owners. And I do think I think in 2021, if we're facing the same health situation or a similar health situation, it's probably going to come up again. And as this situation evolves, my understanding is it could be agreed upon, like a side deal between the Players Association and the owners to implement that for 2021. And I've always thought it was.
And it gives them the chance to agree on something, you know, ahead of the
Yes.
CBA.
Yeah,
And I
no
think,
doubt.
and it's something the union has always wanted. Because they consider the DH a higher paying position than an extra, you know, an 11th or 12th pitcher or position player or whatever. They consider that, and it would allow some of their players, like Ryan Braun, if he so chooses, to stay in the game longer, you know, at decent pay and stuff. So, you know, I do think that that's something that they'll agree on. Because why go back to the pitchers hitting in the National League for 1 year? And then the CBA comes and you do it forevermore. So I strongly feel like you do that we've seen pitchers hit for the last time. And right now it is open to discussion for next year, but I think that discussion is going to happen.
I'm also curious to see about teams potentially relocating during the season. It's been said that if some of these teams are in hot spots, you know, and this outbreak moves so quickly and jumps around from different places, it's hard to know where, you know, sort of the next outbreak is going to be, that we could see some teams moved. I've got to wonder if that would, you know, involve some teams in the Central. You know, certainly Illinois, Chicago is a big big time city, and you know, we've got a roof here, so I don't think you could fit two, you know, put two teams in the same spot necessarily, but maybe as an alternating schedule somehow. I wonder if Milwaukee's going to get more action. That was an initial thought when it was thought that the season could go later into the year, past September, past October. Also, we're gonna see pretty much just the Central this season. It's going to be almost a schedule of predominantly NL Central opponents for the Brewers, and then a dash of the American League Central to keep teams sort of geographically centered. You're going to have individual series, one series apiece with the AL Central teams, and then the rest of the schedule will be filled out with NL Central teams. Curious your thoughts on that. I mean, on the surface, if you're a Brewers fan or any NL Central team, you got to like the idea of playing AL Central teams, which have not been great in recent years as a means of getting a wild card resume boosted. But I think we're talking about such a small sample. I'm not sure any of that's going to matter. You're going to see a lot of Cubs Cardinals matchups that have a lot of meaning and for Brewers fans.
Well, if you're only going to play 60 games and you're going to declare a division champion, you better play as many within the division as you can. You know, in the past, you played them 19 times each. Out of your 162 game schedule. So the schedule is already unbalanced in a great way. So, you know, the word is that it's going to be in a 60-game schedule, you would play 40 games within your division, meaning 10 against each of the other four teams. That would leave 20 to be played against the AL Central. There's five teams over there. You divide 5 into 20, you get 4 against each team. I don't know if they'll try to have the Twins and Brewers play more, and then you would not play one of the other opponents as much to keep that quote-unquote geographical rivalry going. But I mean, you got to play as many as you can within the division, or else it's just going to make a division title even less meaningful. So I think that's the way it should be. It'll be interesting to see if that is the way it's divided up, 40 within the division and then the other 20 across the Central. So they're trying to avoid as much travel as they can. Travel is what really worries them with the COVID. That's when you start losing the bubble concept and you put people out there and expose them more to the possible virus. So we'll see. I think the schedules are being looked at now by both sides. I've heard a rumor that it's going to be announced on national television Friday night on one of the sports networks. So I think we're going to know here very soon what the Brewers' schedule looks like. Be interesting to see if they open at home or on the road. You know, it's opening day is going to be something, even though no fans can go, that's going to be something that everybody's going to want to tune into, right?
Yeah, definitely. And everybody's just so thirsty for that type of content. You saw what the NFL draft did, even if it's, you know, a long way off. People are really, really looking for anything sports related. That would draw well. We know that there's still some things being discussed right now. Health protocols are kind of rolling out bit by bit, and we can't lose sight of the fact that the players are taking a risk that they're going to be in a situation where they could contract the virus and bring it home to their families, and maybe they're at risk family members, things like that. So there's still a lot of that we're still sifting through a little bit. But what else?
If I can just interject this, sure. They got a lot to sift through because it's my understanding the COVID manual went from the original 67 pages to 110. I mean, players better start studying, right? I mean,
yeah,
they will be tested. They will be tested on this.
Yeah, maybe they can get it on tape and have it, you know, read to them while they're working out or something. But outside of the health protocols, which are still going to be top of mind, what other questions do you still have? What's still out there that we're going to find out an answer to soon, or that you think is still something that isn't entirely clear as we get, you know, start moving here now toward spring training 2.0?
Well, I think it's, you know, a lot of it is known already. It is going to be interesting to see some of the roster things and the taxi squad and just how that's handled. Word is they're still going to have a trade deadline on August 31st. Well,
yeah,
that's going to come fast
that?
This year, you know.
Halfway through the season, 2 months, it's going to be so weird.
And with teams losing money with no fans, I wonder how many will try to do salary dumps at that time. You know?
More than that, if you could be 10 games under 500 but still in the race in a 60-game season, so like who's going to be dealing players?
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I'll be interested to see how active that period is with just 1 month to go. Like how much do you really want to give up for a player for 1 month, you know? So, but if you have a devastating injury or something, it may change your mind on that. So, but it's just, you know, just every day is going to be something we've never seen before, right? And so it's, I just wonder if the players are as prepared as they're going to need to be to play under such different circumstances. The no fans alone is going to be like playing the games in a public library, you know? So, you know, they get a lot of their energy and focus from fan reaction. And now they won't have any of that. No spitting? Really? Are these players really going to be able to not spit? Are they going to be able to talk about having to change the way? What about you? We see the way they eat sunflower seeds and spit them out from the dugout. They're supposedly not going to be able to do that anymore. What are they going to do with themselves? You know what? Are we going to just like become massive bubblegum chewers here now? Which still means no spitting. their life on and off the field is about to dramatically change. And I know we're only talking about 60 games, but it's still going to be dramatically different. The wet rag thing, a pitcher's going to be able to, so he doesn't lick his fingers, he's going to be able to keep a wet rag in his back pocket? What in the world? and what kind of weird stuff are the players going to try to put into that? So we're in a whole new world here, and, get out of the ballpark within an hour, both media and players. I mean, you liked my tweet that I'm working on my exit velocity. You know, I'm old and slow. I'm not sure I can get out of there in an hour.
Yeah, you got to get back up to the press box or whatever area. I mean, that's a lot of work. That's hard to do at Miller Park. I mean, in all stadiums, it's a long
we
walk.
We won't have to get back up to the press box because I don't think we'll actually ever leave it.
That's true. Yes, I forgot about that. There will be no reason to go to the clubhouse as
we're
that
not actually
will
get to
be
talk
limits.
To anybody. We're going to be Zooming with everyone. So
it's just like life.
I mean, we can just, I theoretically could do it from my couch, but I would like to at least be able to say I was out at the ballpark watching the game, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Hey, as a brief personal opinion aside, I've never understood why baseball is like cool with people spitting sunflower seeds everywhere, and you know, just it is a gross environment a little bit that I've never quite understood why it's to that degree. But
yeah,
still,
the dugout gets a little bit like a cesspool over the course of the game.
It's nasty, and why? Like, why do we do this thing at restaurants where we put peanut shells on the floor? Why do we do that? That's weird. But now
well,
it's over with COVID. It's over.
Make people change those behaviors. Let's see if it sticks, right?
Yes, definitely, definitely. I am there is the smallest of silver linings, I guess, in my worldview, but still, you know, still, I think the biggest question we still have here is whether or not this season finishes. You know, the virus is, you know, still dictating a lot of policy, and if
and also, what level of outbreak could possibly stop a team or a season? Is it four guys, five guys, six guys, seven guys, eight guys? You know, what level? I mean, some guys are going to test positive. We've already seen them do it just working out in the last couple of weeks, right?
Yeah. Some guys are going to report to camp positive.
Yeah. And I know players have asked out loud, what happens to me if it happens to me on the road? Am I going to be quarantined in that hotel for 14 days and get left behind? There's lots of questions to be answered on the COVID front.
Yeah.
And, there's going to be a time where we're going to need the answers because it's going to happen. You would be living in the most Pollyannish of worlds to think that 50 times 30, you know, we got 50 players when you include taxi squads and stuff, times 30 teams, that none of them are going to get sick once the season starts. So it's just going to be interesting to see how baseball responds and at what level do they have to think about stopping. Nobody wants that to happen, JR.
Right.
But it's, you know, we look around the country now. People that decided they didn't have to behave properly are now paying a price for it. So that's why these players are going to get a 110-page manual, because that's what it's going to take to try to stay well.
Yeah, we've talked about what happens if a star tests positive, a Mike Trout or Christian Yelich.
Out of 14-game quarantine, out of 60 games.
Right, and what happens if the entire starting infield tests positive? And it happens right before the playoffs.
How about all three of your catchers get it?
Right. What happens then? And I mean, does the other team want to play that day? They're going to be on a really tight schedule. It's not like they can just take 2 weeks off and expect to hit some sort of benchmark. They really want this thing done by September because everyone's worried in October that the virus is going to pick back up. I as we talk about it now, it honestly almost feels impossible that they're going to be able to pull this off. But, you know, maybe we just put the blinders on for
but
now.
You got to try. You got to try, right?
You absolutely have to try.
Got to try. And that's what is the real shame about this delay with the hostility and negotiations. They could already be getting ready for a July 4th start. You know, and let's see if they just live to regret that.
Yeah. We will talk more, like I said, on the next podcast about how things are shaping up for the Brewers specifically. We'll just let's reintroduce ourselves to the roster and all those new guys on 1 year contracts, new Brewers that we'll figure in. There were some injuries when we checked out of spring training that have kind of become passe. Eric Lauer, Luis Urias, Corey Knebel. There's the DH situation that we talked about a little bit. We got to talk about the rotation. Who's going to make the taxi squad? Things like that. We can get into some of those weeds and finally start talking about specific Brewers baseball topics as we're a week away from players just, you know, reporting and getting into shape and testing, and we'll see what happens with all of that.
This is what we wanted, right?
Real baseball. It is what we wanted.
Well, this is what we wanted. So there's an old saying, be careful what you wish for. But we got lots to talk about now, lots to talk about. And we're still a week away from camps even opening.
Yes, it's true. It's going to be an adventure. Even when camps open, there will be a lot of discussion, a lot of health stuff. It's going to be crazy. We will talk about it more at length next week, Tom. Thanks for joining me on the Brewers Journal Sentinel podcast. We will stay healthy. We're going to need you. We can't have you getting it either. Or I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, I'll just leave it. I'll leave us with two words we've been waiting to hear. Play ball.
Play ball indeed. Thanks for tuning in. Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. And we will again check in with you next week. Thanks for joining us. Take care.